Whenever we're trying to make sense of a passage like that, we need to remember what is the story that we are a part of. What is the background? What are the events that kind of lead into this moment? And clearly, Mark wants us to understand a lot of the background because it's an unusual passage in the Gospel of Mark. If you've ever seen a red letter Bible, ones where the words of Jesus are written in red ink and the rest is in black ink, until this point in Mark's Gospel, it's mostly been black because it's mostly just been descriptions about the things that Jesus has done, the mighty works that he has done, the different ways that he's interacted and healed and brought life and announced the good news. But we haven't had a lot of parables or teachings of Jesus. And so this is one of the first places where we get a bunch of red text, the sayings of Jesus as he's trying to make sense of this. And in between all of this, we get all these little bits in brackets as Mark tries to explain to us what is the background of all of this, because he's writing not to a Jewish audience, not to a community that is familiar with all of these things, but people like us who've got no clue about what all these practices are about clean and unclean and washing this way and washing that way. So for example, the washing of hands, it had nothing to do with hygiene. It wasn't about just making sure that you followed the proper practices. You know, we're very used to that now that we have hand sanitizer in every point that you turn to make sure that we sanitize our hands. It's not about that at all. It's about ritual. It's about this sense of whether it's common or pure, whether it's filled with the Spirit of God, whether it's set apart and dedicated to the Lord or not. So that practice of washing the hands was meant to simply remember, to remind you that you're moving into a different space, a different place. And it's also a community that doesn't have a lot of water. And so it's not this kind of plunging your hands into a bath of water. You would have stone jars set aside, and we know that from the story of the wedding at Cana, these big stone jars that didn't allow impurities to get in. And so you would have those and you would just draw out. And for washing of hands, it was described as an eggshell and a half of water. So a tidy little bit of water. And you'd start with your fingers pointing up. And so your host would just pour a little half of that water over your fingers until it ran down to your wrist. And then the same on the other side. And then with your other hand, you would make a fist and kind of squanch it around and then do the same. But your hands at this point are still dirty, ritually, because they've been unclean and they've now washed themselves with water that has become unclean. And so you need a second washing, now with your hands pointed down, and they start with the water pouring over the wrist until it runs down each of the fingers, and you're able to see that. And now, voila, your hands are clean. But not about hygiene, but about ritual, about setting ourselves aside for the Lord. And where does all this come from? You don't find any of these descriptions in the Bible. There's nothing in the Hebrew scriptures that indicate what this is all about. But this comes from about 5 centuries before the time of Jesus. So about 6 centuries, in the year 586, the Babylonians had conquered Jerusalem and the southern kingdom of Judah. The northern kingdom had already fallen more than a century before that to the Assyrians. But when the Babylonians struck at the very heart of Israel, destroying the city of Jerusalem and the temple that King Solomon had built, a lot of people really reflected upon what on earth happened. Now, we thought that God was going to be with us. We thought that God would stay with us, that his presence was there in the temple, and that God would continue to be with his people. But instead, so many of them were taken into exile to Babylon. And so they're pondering this and praying through this. And when people begin to return, when the Persians finally conquer the Babylonians and King Cyrus gives them that decree to say, you can go back to Jerusalem, back and to rebuild. At that time, there also developed this new movement within Judaism that we now call the scribes. And they were the ones who began to kind of look at this story, to make sense of things and say, well, God has given us all these laws, but some of them are a bit confusing. Some of them don't give us enough detail. So they began to make up new rules and regulations and laws that they began to tell each other orally. There's no record, at least, of anything being written down. In fact, until about 200 years after Jesus, when they compiled what we call the Mishnah. And there in the Mishnah, all of these different rules and regulations, these oral traditions until this point, begin to be written down. And it's there that you find rules and things about how you wash cups and pots and bronze dishes and how you wash your hands and the description of all of those different things in order, they think, to make sure that we're faithful this time to God, that we don't break the covenant. That was the intention. That was their desire. They wanted to avoid the exile. They wanted to avoid the destruction of Jerusalem. Of course, that didn't happen. 40 years after the time of Jesus, the Romans this time come through and completely and utterly destroy the temple. But that was their intention. That was their desire. But once you start to move in that direction, once you start to say, look, if only we do all of these things perfectly, if only we're able to dedicate ourselves to all of these rules, all of these things, to make sure that we're faithful to God, then God will surely bless us and God will surely be part of our lives and surely we will no longer run away, we'll no longer be unfaithful to God. Once you turn that into just outward observance, as Jesus says, you miss the essence of what all this is about. You forget the why. We've got to remember, why are we doing these things in the first place? I mean, there are so many things that are part of our worship, so many things that, enter into life. Part of an institution, part of when people gather together, we like rules, we like things to make a certain sense. And so we bring these things in. But unless you remember why they came in the first place, what the reason for their existence is, you naturally, so easily fall into the same habit, the same practice, and you miss the essence of what the Lord is inviting us into. So Jesus is wanting us to live in freedom. He's wanting us to find this space to serve Him and worship Him unencumbered. And so He's reminding us that it's not about the externals that matter so much. There's a significance to, there's an importance to those things, but it's what happens on the inside. That's where it matters. And that's where we will be judged. That's where we are able to offer ourselves and dedicate and grow in virtue and love and goodness and grace and kindness by surrendering all of those things that are not of God, that don't lead us to a place of freedom. We can, in that place, join Moses, who was just almost in this ecstatic place as he's pondering there in the book of Deuteronomy, all of the ways that God continues to draw close to us, that He wants to be part of our lives, that He wants to experience this full flourishing. And the law of God was one of those ways that is available to us to experience the closeness of God. Let's remember that God is near, that God has drawn close. And in Jesus, He's wanting us to find this freedom and this life. And that in God, we're able to experience this transforming power to change us and allow us to experience the indwelling presence of God.